Alabama Republicans have had a supermajority in the House, Senate, and the governor's mansion for well over a decade, but education savings accounts have been diametrically opposed by them. We're going to talk about why that is, but more importantly, why that's changed. We have an incredible culture here in the state of Alabama, but our politics and public policy don't reflect the people of Alabama. Media drives culture. Culture is what drives politics and public policy. Welcome, everyone, to 1819 News, the podcast. I'm Brian Dawson, CEO of 1819 News, and host of this here podcast, where we are in pursuit of a free and flourishing Alabama every single week. We've got a great episode for you guys this week. We'll be talking about, well, we're pursuing a free and flourishing Alabama. We're going to be talking about education freedom and parental rights and school choice. We're bringing on the school choice evangelist, Corey DeAngelis, who's a senior fellow at the American Federation for Children. He's going to be coming on to really just tell us his story about his journey in the school choice space. And I'm just really interested in hearing really from the idea of school choice vouchers, you know, all this stuff, the inception of it, how it's grown, the momentum that it's picked up. I want to know what states are doing it the best. How does Alabama's bill stack up? So we're going to be talking about all of those things. And so I want to bring on Corey DeAngelis. Corey, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, before we get to Corey, we're going to jump in. And I want to tell you guys, you know, we need your help. We need you guys to join the fight. But it's not about us needing it. That is important. But we are citizen supported journalism. And so, you know, conservatives have never been, known to, we've never had to pay for news before. It's always been given to us. And we've never asked the question, how come my news is free? How come someone's filling up my newsfeed with things that don't cost me anything? Well, someone's paying for it. And that someone that's paying for it is wanting to influence you, in some way or somehow. And so in order for you to have news that doesn't do that, that's actually working for you, the consumer, the Alabama citizen has to pay for it. You think about the way that corporations influence journalists and news organizations. You know, we can't figure out what happened with COVID, brought to you by Pfizer, right? These type of things. We have figured out that corporations sponsoring journalism means that there's no such thing as corporate-sponsored journalism. You can only have real journalism when it's paid for by the people it was created to serve. And so we need you guys to go to the website, 1819news.com, click the button, become a member, do that today. Memberships start as little as $5 a month. With that, you get access to special behind-the-scenes content and really cool merch. Our hats are the absolute best. If you don't have one of those, you are missing out. So please go do that. All right. Well, Corey, thank you again. I know I just said thank you and welcome to you, but you do incredible work. Being in purpose-driven work is a lot different than, you know, making widgets. And so I'm grateful to God that I get to work in a place where I get to make a difference. And I would say that's probably how you feel about your job.
Yeah, look, I really got into this as a researcher studying the benefits of school choice programs. The first one study that I actually did looked at the Milwaukee voucher program. It started in 1990, and we followed students until they were about 30 years of age using the longitudinal evaluation data. And we found that students using a private school choice initiative into adulthood, they were substantially less likely to commit crimes as adults, all else equal, after controlling for whether you were in a two-parent household, your race, your income, and other background characteristics as well. So school choice can benefit kids academically, but as we've seen over the past few years, with a lot of these non-academic benefits of getting to choose, like getting to choose a school that aligns with your values, getting to choose a safer school and one that is good at character development, could also reduce crime in the long run as well.
That's amazing. And so, want to kind of hear a little bit more of your story and your journey, but also the story and journey of the school choice movement, kind of from your point of view. I think it's amazing. There's so much negative going on. There's so much bad going on. You hear so many bad things in the news, but it's really, really, really cool to watch the national winds trend parental rights, education, freedom, and watch states adopt it. Some of it because they have great leadership in their state, other states because they have great followership and leadership, and they're just catching those national winds and know that they're going to pay the price if they don't. Either way, education, you know, education, freedom, school choice, parental rights, is in the air, and it's really sweeping across the nation. So, if there's more to add to your story, we'd love to hear it. And then talk about really where did the school choice movement come from?
Yeah, look, with the oldest voucher programs in the country actually started in the late 1800s in Maine and Vermont. They were actually created for students in rural areas that were so rural that they didn't have any public schools. So the state gave vouchers to those families to choose private schools, religious or non-religious schools, or other public schools in nearby districts. So they figured out over 100 years ago in states like Maine and Vermont, very rural areas, that not having a lot of choices was an argument to expand opportunities, not to restrict them. And ever since then, we've had kind of incremental reform on school choice. It was, first in Maine and Vermont, it was for students in rural areas that didn't have a public school. Then we had programs expanding for students who were only low-income families. Then it was students with special needs. And so it was a lot of this picking winners and losers throughout history, but nonetheless, expanding education freedom in an incremental way for decades. Fast forward to the COVID era school closures induced by the teachers' unions that held children's education hostage to secure multiple multi-billion dollar ransom payments from taxpayers. They kept the schools closed as long as possible in order to extort more taxpayer resources. It worked for them. They received about $190 billion in so-called COVID relief since March of 2020, but their plan backfired because the Zoom school, remote learning, which we should have just called remotely learning because there wasn't a lot of learning going on, was that families got to see a little bit what was happening in the classroom, and families who thought their kids were in good public schools based on their test scores or their state ratings started to see something else was going on. There was another dimension of school quality that's arguably more important than anything that can be captured by a test, which is whether the school's curriculum aligns with families' values. So that has started a parental rights revolution. They started pushing back at school board meetings. That wasn't very fruitful. In some cases it was. Conservatives took over some school boards. But in some cases you had the National School Board Association implying to the Department of Justice that some parents should be labeled as domestic terrorists for protesting at school board meetings in a peaceful way. And then you even had some school boards silencing parents with cutting off their mics when they were trying to read material that they didn't want in their schools. So when families saw that the democratic form of accountability wasn't working with the school system, they started to clamor for bottom-up real accountability by allowing families to vote with their feet. If you're not going to listen to me, if you're going to cut off my mic, if you're going to label me as an evil person for wanting a say in my child's education, I'm going to fight to take my money elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened. Since 2020, we've had three states. Over the past 4 years now, we've had 10 states go all in on school choice. Universal, everybody's eligible. No more picking winners and losers. Every family, regardless of background, zip code, in 10 red states now, in just a short period of time, one in every five states now has universal access to education freedom. So the first one was West Virginia, very rural state. You had Arizona did it with one seat GOP majorities, meaning every Republican had to vote in favor of their party platform issue with school choice. Most recently, we had North Carolina. All Republicans signed on to their bill to fund students as opposed to systems. And now it's looking like Alabama might be number 11 with a universal school choice bill passing the House, passing a Senate committee, and as of time of this recording, it's expected to pass the Alabama House as well, and the Senate as well. And Governor Kay Ivey, for the first time in her State of the State address this year, called for universal school choice and named it her number one legislative priority. So we've seen a groundswell of support and a seismic shift when it comes to the Alabama legislature and just nationwide towards empowering parents and away from listening to the establishment, away from listening to the status quo liberal government school unions that want to trap your kids in their monopolistic institutions. Families are finally being empowered, and it's the red states, it's the Republicans, the parents' party that are leading the charge.
Amazing. So one of the things that we did that when we launched 1819 News, we knew we really wanted to dig into why in this great, amazing state our education lacked. Now, do we ever anticipate Alabama being a number one? No, but there's no reason we couldn't be number 10, you know, like, and maybe we could be number one, who knows, but 52nd is not a good place to be when there's 50 states. You know, remember the first time someone told me that Alabama was 52nd and I was like, is that a joke because we didn't go to school and we can't count? Like, what are you saying? And they're like, well, no, Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. And I'm like, oh, great. We're behind them. And so it's abysmal. And the way that it's currently set up now, I think you understand basic economics. Most people do. You get more of what you incentivize, less of what you penalize. Yep. Currently, the worse a school does or the worse the education system in a state does, the more money they get. We need more money. That's right. We need more money, right? And so they're incentivizing poor performance. So we're going to continue to get that unless there's some type of a breakup. Well, as we assessed what was going on in the state, we did some investigation, something no other news outlet in the state does anymore. And we dug into looking at the AEA, which is the teachers union here, which is the affiliate of the National Education Association, Marxist, godless, Christ-hating institution, yep. But I digress. They gave $1.5 million to candidates in the last election cycle. 1 million of that 1.5 million, so 2/3, went to Republicans, despite an ALGOP bylaw strongly suggesting that legislators not take money from the NEA or any of its state level affiliates, the AEA. And so in showing that, we exposed all these Republicans. To me, that's like Planned Parenthood giving money to Republicans or Republicans taking exactly money. Right. Yeah. And so they're taking all this money from a teachers union, and then all we can't understand why there's no movement on school choice in Alabama. So we exposed that. We began to really dig in and show some horrible things that are going on in the state. I've told this story several times, but just an example. There was a guy named James Miller in Huntsville, was a Huntsville City school teacher, who was moonlighting as a drag queen, dressed in full drag, reading books to children, making sexual quips. We exposed him. They gave him a 2-week suspension. Didn't even get rid of him. Gave him a 2-week paid suspension. He comes back. We question, why does Mr. Miller still have his job? We think he has boundaries. That's weird. I looked at him, and boundaries wasn't my first conclusion I came to looking at him in drag, but okay. And so we continued to dig and found him on a podcast called Look Who's Tucking. Can't make it up. Huh. Look Who's Tucking. Where he's admitted to strategically and covertly placing LGBTQ materials in the classroom. He retired the next day. So by exposing the teachers union, showing what's going on in the schools, and then highlighting alternatives like a school here in Birmingham called Cornerstone that is going to benefit massively from the school choice that's helping impoverished children have a real Christ-centered, amazing, high-quality education, doing that kind of expose the teachers union, highlight the problems, highlight alternatives, feel that we've been able to bring those national trends that you're creating. We were able to kind of pull those wins to Alabama by doing that. Yep. And saw, as you said, Kay Ivey's been diametrically opposed to school choice. And so super pleased, super proud of her for making the decision to do that and making it such a priority for this session.
Yeah, I'll take any convert I can. I don't care how they get here, but as long as they're on our side now, that's all that matters. And I think you're right about the work of exposing what's the rot that's happening in the system is really important within a state. Even if you have the national trend, you need that work on the ground as well, because you'll get the problem of the average voter saying, I don't like Congress, but I like my congressman. Yeah. And you have everybody, if they talk about their own congressman, they like it. And it's always the problem is over there. And so when you see these things on the national news on Fox or other in other places, you'll have Alabama legislators, they could just use the excuse of, well, that's California. It's not happening here. We're a red state. But as you've pointed out, this is in all states. It's happening everywhere. I've seen it in my home state of Texas as well. And you need to shine a light on those problems, because sunlight is the best disinfectant and it's the best way to mobilize the base, the voters, the parents, to become a new special interest group that's actually more powerful than any teachers union could ever imagine to be, because parents care about their kids more than anybody else. They're going to fight harder than anybody else for the right to educate their own kids. And they have more power in numbers. Families outnumber the unions at the government schools. And so we're seeing this flip happen in Alabama as well, where, you know, everybody kind of scratched their head for a long time in the school choice movement, saying, how in the hell does Alabama not have universal school choice with it being on the Republican Party platform and your legislature having super majorities in both chambers? Well, the teachers unions are dumb in a lot of ways, but when it comes to politics, they can kind of get some things right every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And they know in purple states and in blue states, they go all in with the Democrats. But in deep red states like Alabama, they know they're not going to get a Democrat majority. So they know they need to try to buy off as many Republicans as possible to block education freedom. But for what we've seen in Alabama now is that, one, the legislators are realizing that there's a more powerful interest group, or actually a general interest group. Parents want more of a say in their kids' education.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the teachers' unions aren't as strong as they say they are. This happened in West Virginia, too. The story in West Virginia is in 2019, they tried to pass a special needs tiny education savings account program, kind of like the one education savings accounts, what you're pushing for in Alabama right now. But this was a very tiny program and it failed. And then the teachers unions tried to oust the legislators who voted for school choice, even though the bill didn't pass. And they didn't kill the king. And so the legislators came back next time around. And they said, look, these people are paper tigers. They don't have as much influence as they try to pretend they have. And, you know, I'm just going to vote for my party platform. And then very quickly, shortly afterwards, in 2021, West Virginia went from not having the votes to overwhelmingly passing universal school choice. And those legislators kept their seats. In fact, they expanded their majorities of Republicans in the West Virginia legislature afterwards.
Talk about some of the other states and what they've done. What states do you believe are doing it, you know, the best? You know, what are some pitfalls to watch out for? That kind of stuff.
So Florida and Arizona, everybody typically points to. Florida's been a leader on school choice for a very long time, and there's a lot of evidence out of Florida that we can point to say this is a successful model. There's actually at least 11 studies that look at the competitive effects of school choice on the public schools, because the main argument from the other side is, well, this is great to empower families. Of course, they're going to benefit because they get a choice. But what about the kids who remain in the public schools? This is going to, they'll say it'll decimate the public schools or it'll defund them. Neither of those things have been true. The public school funding has gone up year after year in Florida. And then also the competitive effects studies, 10 out of the 11 find positive effects of school choice competition on the outcomes in the public schools. They up their game in response to competition. And so school choice has been a rising tide that lifts all boats. And last year, even though they were already pretty much all the way there, they busted the caps entirely in Florida and went all in on universal school choice last year. Arizona, I would say, is the simplest program to emulate. And I'd say it's the best one. One, because it's an education savings account. And for listeners, just so you know what an ESA is, it's kind of like a voucher where you can take your money meant for educating your child that would go to the public school. You can still take it there. You could also take it to a private school to pay for tuition and fees, which would be a regular scholarship. But with an education savings account, that money goes into a savings account directed by the parent, much like an HSA, a health savings account, can only be used for education expenditures. You can't go buy a big screen TV. You have to use it for private school tuition, textbooks, tutoring. You can use it for homeschool curriculum as well. And it really maximizes the flexibility and customization on the part of the parent. And the other reason why Arizona, I'd say, is the best is that it is, well, there's three reasons. Two is it's pretty much has no regulations attached to it. Of course, they want to make sure the money is being spent on non-fraudulent items, that you can't go, you know, just buy it willy-nilly, whatever you want. So they have those kind of audits in place, but they don't say you have to have this curriculum or that specific curriculum. They don't say that you have to get this kind of standardized test in your school. They don't say you have to have this sort of admissions process. It's all pretty open. It's a very light touch on just audits for fraud, but otherwise it maximizes parent power, and then it maximizes freedom on the part of the private education providers. The private schools can remain private. They don't turn into public schools with this program. So that's a huge win in Arizona. And then the third, and I'd say one of the most important aspects of the bill, is that it doesn't have a budget cap. If everybody, so Arizona has 1.1 million students. They currently have, 70 to 80,000 students using the initiative. They actually crashed the government website trying to apply for these scholarships right when they opened up in 2022.
Wow.
And now you have almost 7% of the school age population using these scholarships or more in Arizona. And if everybody wanted to use it, you could have theoretically 1 million students using that initiative. The thing is, some people do like their public schools, and you can keep your public school with the school choice initiative. So a lot of people stay in the public schools, but also at the same time, there is a large number, 70 to 75,000 right now in Arizona, that have switched to the Education Savings Account initiative. So parents want this. And it hasn't destroyed the public schools. The Arizona public schools have gotten better over time as well, as they've expanded their school choice initiative. And it's a maximum freedom program. So I would say replicate the Arizona success in other states as well. And it looks like the bill in Alabama is pretty dang similar in that it's an education savings account. The one major difference I'd say is that there are budget caps, and it is not universal in the first year. It ratchets up to universal eligibility over 3 years, which is good. We'll take that incremental over three years. And it's built into the bill that the income cap goes away over time. So that's a great news. You don't have to go and vote on it again to expand it. But I think there is a cap on the number of students that can use the initiative. That's pretty easy to get rid of later as well, because, I mean, look, you start this kind of pilot program thing, you show demand for it, and let's say the cap is, I don't remember how many it is. Let's say it's 50,000 students. I'm not sure how many it is. Let's say 100,000 students want to use it. Well, then you go back and you bust the cap with the evidence of families wanting to use it. So all around, this is not perfect. It's not the Arizona bill, but from where we've come in Alabama to not being able to pass an ESA, to getting this, to joining the ranks of 10 other red states of being a universal eligibility initiative, this is a huge win once it passes the Senate.
Sure. What in the world happened in Arizona for them to be able to get that strong of legislation? What was the perfect storm that took place there? What, and it wasn't even under a really strong governor, was it?
Well, Governor Ducey pushed for it, and he did. He was instrumental in his last term, last year in office in 2022. He, in January, during his State of the State, he said, "Let's expand school choice any way we can. Get me the bill, any of them, and I'll sign them." So he made it one of his legislative priorities as well. And then as far as getting it done in Arizona, they were the first state to have an ESA. They started with an education savings account in, I want to say, 2012. So they were able to show proof of concept. It was first, these students, they slowly started to introduce more groups of students. It was, it wasn't low income, it was special needs. And then it was like military families. And they started to slowly keep adding more and more groups of families until it became bigger and bigger. And before 2021, it was about 20% of the population was eligible. And then in 2022, they expanded it to everybody being eligible. And then I think part of the perfect storm is, one, as I mentioned earlier, being in a purple state, the unions, they just try to get a Democrat majority. And when they fail to do so, none of the politicians on the Republican side are owned by the teachers unions for the most part. And so they're not beholden to them. And so even if you just have a one seat majority, typically all the Republicans on this issue will band together and vote for school choice. It becomes more problematic when you have these deeper red states. It's kind of counterintuitive, but it's the way that the unions behave. They did this in Texas too. They bought off the NEA endorsed, I want to say, 19 of the 21 Republicans who voted against school choice in the Texas House last year. Wow. So these were the same guys that were already owned by the teachers unions. Five of them didn't run for re-election last night. We're talking, you know, May 5th, the election, because they saw the writing on the wall. The remaining 16, out of the remaining 16, 10 of them were either forced into a runoff or they lost their seats outright in the March 5th election in Texas. So it was a seismic shift. I think we're going to have the votes in Texas as well.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that's a signal that gets sent. Because what you just described is purple states are actually easier to get extremely conservative legislation passed because the Republicans actually have to be conservative. In Alabama, you can just say that you're conservative, right?
And so, and you have a lot of people who were Democrats before. I don't know if this is the case in Alabama. Probably it is.
100%.
They just changed their party affiliation to get elected.
Correct. And that's why the biggest thing that our last two speakers of the House and their big political consultants who had Mac McCutcheon, Nathaniel Ledbetter, and their political consultant, Steve Raby, Republican supermajority House, Republican supermajority Senate, Republican governors, what they were able to accomplish was raise the gas tax. They passed medical marijuana, which has been an absolute disaster. Now they're pushing for full-blown casino gambling with Medicaid expansion tied in. So that's what they've done.
I mean, you see this in Mississippi right now as well. It's unfolding. We push for school choice. The speaker apparently is a supporter of education freedom, but I just heard news that they passed Medicaid expansion out of their house and the school choice bill didn't even make it to the floor.
Yeah.
How's that happen?
It's insane. And the Daily Wire did an expose on the stronger your supermajority, the more moderate your Republican, which is just bizarre. Wow. It's counterintuitive. And so the only thing I can think of is that, you know, in order to get elected, you actually have to really be conservative. If you're in a purple state and people are going to, you know, risk voting for a Republican or whatever, they actually have to be one, not just pretend to be one. That's the only thing I can think of. So
the other thing is there's open primaries in places like Texas. So a lot of the Democrats will vote for the rhino in the Republican primary, and then they'll go vote for Joe Biden in the general election. Same. So that's, you know, they've been pushing to close primaries here in Texas. I think there'll be a big push this next session, especially after all the school district electioneering that happened in this latest election. You had the school district superintendents and other officials illegally pressuring employees to vote for or against specific candidates, which Ken Paxton, thankfully, our attorney general, laid down the law and sued a bunch of them, at least six of the districts. And he won a lot of his endorsements when it came to the judges on the statewide offices. So sure. A lot of winning in Texas lately, and hopefully it doesn't come to that in Alabama on the school choice front. It doesn't look like it's going to. It looks like it's
going
to finally happen.
Yeah, and before I jump to my only beef with the school choice bill, here in Alabama, but you know, one thing we have a lot in common, and I think the biggest thing that Texas and Alabama has in common is we have the greatest attorney generals in the country, with Steve Marshall and Ken Paxton, like not even close, right? So, really, really appreciate what Ken Paxton's doing and willing to go through, in order that justice may reign in the great state of Texas. My only beef with the Alabama bill, is that they limit homeschool families to $2,000 per child, and they limit homeschool families to two children. How many homeschool families do you know that only have two children?
Right, exactly. Right?
So it's like
homeschool families typically have more children because it's more more economically feasible to homeschool because you guys could. Right. So I mean, the argument is, you know, homeschool curriculum doesn't cost that much. Homeschoolers always come to us saying that, you know, it only costs them a few hundred bucks to educate each kid each year. But that should not matter because they're paying property taxes too, right, and other forms of taxes. And the government schools spend well over $10,000 per kid. Shouldn't they get at least, you know, half of that amount back since they're paying into the system? That money's meant for their kid. And yeah, maybe homeschooling only costs X dollars per year, but that's when you're really pinching pennies to try to make ends meet. You could you can imagine a world where if you're getting 5,000 back or more, where your homeschool environment looks a lot different. Maybe it's more feasible to do a micro school even, or maybe you want to switch to a homeschool co-op, or you can pay some professional tutors as well.
Sure.
So there's, you know, I agree with you that it should be parity. It should be the same amount regardless of the type of education that works best for your kid. At the same time, look, 2,000 is better than zero.
Correct.
Let's take the one we can.
I'm willing to take the reduced amount, but don't limit the number of children that can participate. That's where it's like, come on.
That's a new one. I've seen other states have done the reduced amount, like Oklahoma. They have a refundable tax credit as well. And it's like 7,000 for kids that go to private school or other private providers. But for homeschooling, it's like $1,000 or $2,000 in Oklahoma. But who knows? Maybe homeschool families sign up, show that they really want it, and say, "Hey," then the homeschool family should go lobby to the legislature and say, "This is unfair. This is unjust." It's not over until it's over, right? This is the House version. The Senate may say, "You're right, Brian. Let's amend the bill or have our own version to not discriminate on the basis of the number of kids you have."
Yeah. No, and I mean, I'll just make a bold prediction again. It could be getting decided on right now, and I'll just be flat out no as soon as we come off the podcast, and I was wrong. But I anticipate the legislature is not going to do anything, and lobbying the legislature might not be as effective as if you get a Will Ainsworth or a Steve Marshall in as the governor, which are the two strongest chances of being as our current lieutenant governor and our attorney general. If they get in, they'll just, you know, make that a priority.
Oh yeah. They're both awesome.
They're both good on the issue. Yeah. So, but either way, more than anything, I'm excited, just to see the movement, and KIV doing a complete about face. That's my only real major beef was the limiting number of children. It's a reduced amount. And it's funny cause I have seven children. So whether they gave the full 7,000 for two kids, I would have got 14,000. Or whether they did 2,000 for all seven kids, I would get 14,000. But right now, I'm only getting four, and that's fine. I don't even know if I'm going to participate in it or not. I'd have to.
Compare that math to how much would have been spent on those same kids in the government schools.
Oh yeah,
it's the no-brainer tax savings.
Yep.
It's a benefit to the families. It's also a benefit to the taxpayers.
Yep.
And regardless of the type of school you're choosing.
Yep. Well, good stuff. Trying to think if there's anything else that we want to cover going into. Maybe we go into a little bit more detail about what happened in Texas. So you kind of mentioned. Just give us the whole shooting match on that.
Yeah, the election in Texas last night was an absolute bloodbath and a mandate for school choice. We had 21 so-called Republicans voting with all the Democrats in the Texas House to block education freedom after it easily passed the Senate 18-13 with only one Republican defection in the Senate. And these guys were all endorsed by the NEA before, basically all, I think one of them wasn't, but the vast majority of them were. And five of them didn't even run for re-election because they saw the writing on the wall. They know how popular school choice is with voters. We had poll after poll after poll coming out from University of Houston, University of Texas Austin, Dallas Morning News, Morning Consult, poll after poll in Texas showing school choice is popular, especially with Republican primary voters. The latest poll showing that 60% of Texas Republican primary voters from the University of Houston were less likely to vote for a incumbent if they voted against school choice, and only 16% said the opposite. So it's a political winner. It's the right thing to do. It's on the Republican Party platform. And my organization, the American Federation for Children, we engaged in 13 of those 16 remaining races and of those incumbents who voted against school choice. And we won six of those races outright. And the other four, we forced them into a runoff. We were up in three of those four runoff races. And so out of the 13 races we engaged in, we either won them outright or forced them into a runoff in 10 of them, which is 77% of the races that we engaged in against the anti-school choice incumbents in Texas. And just think about it. Taking out of an incumbent is typically the hardest thing to do in politics. On average, incumbents win about 90% of the time. Yeah. We totally inverted that trend. It was a total bloodbath against school choice incumbents. And this is going to send a shockwave all across the country. I mean, if you're in Alabama Senate right now and you're thinking about whether you should vote for school choice, if you don't know about what happened to Texas, I'm sure some of your friends are telling you about it. It's a huge political winner. The GOP has become the parents' party, and conservative voters, the grassroots, are holding their elected officials accountable for doing the right thing, especially if you want to say that you're a conservative, you want to say you're a Republican. This is a GOP litmus test issue, if I ever saw one. And there's a lot of other states that are going to look over at Texas as well. Louisiana this year is probably going to go all in on school choice as well. Awesome. Tennessee is very close to passing universal school choice as well this year. So the wildfire is continuing to spread in red states all across the country. And the election in Texas last night only supercharges the school choice revolution that was already happening because the teachers unions overplayed their hand and awakened a sleeping giant, which happens to be parents who want more of a say in their kids' education.
Parental rights is going to be, I think, the issue of our age. And I think school choice falls under that parental rights. And so I think these are two huge issues. Well, Corey, where can people find you?
You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter. It's at DeAngelisCorey. And you can check out my new book coming out. It's already available for pre-order, but the release date is May 14th, 2024. We talk about a lot of what we covered on the podcast today about the school choice revolution. The name of the book is The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. And you can get it just about anywhere, Amazon, Walmart, Target. You might not want to shop at Target for a lot of reasons. Barnes and Noble. But basically anywhere you want to get books, The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools.
Amazing. All right, Corey DeAngelis, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brian.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for this week, guys. Until next time, put your trust in God and keep your powder dry.